Hodges, and this is the LDCU Talking Online Learning Podcast, Episode 5. In this episode, I had the pleasure of chatting with Christoph Hurl from the Philosophy Department and Lida Merbaha from Warwick Medical School. Christoph shares some useful insights into the move to online and blended learning, the student experience, and some of the challenges we face. And Lida shares her experience and that of her colleagues and team launching a brand new BSc program during these challenging times. I'll keep this introduction short, as I'm sure you're keen to hear what they had to say. I'm here with Christoph Hurl, but perhaps rather than me introduce you, could you introduce yourself, Christoph, and say a little bit about your role and work at Warwick?
Yeah, so I teach in the philosophy department at Warwick, and at the moment I'm teaching a module called Making Decisions for Honours Level Undergraduates, and I'm also the Director of Education for the philosophy department.
Okay, well, quite a year for all of us to cope with and manage, and lots of change, of course. Can you say something about your experience, perhaps as a department, as a team, and personally? What's been your experience of switching to online learning?
Well, it's been an uphill struggle, obviously, quite a learning curve. But I think we've seen for a little while that at least some students don't engage with the traditional mode of teaching. So I think that the writing was on the wall anyway, that we need to think more creatively about what we're doing in our modules. It's also in my role as Director of Education, obviously, it's been quite a lot of work over the summer with new arrangements, with the whole situation with exams and so on. But I think the main thing was that maybe about 4 weeks into term, we started getting more like a rhythm, it became slightly more routine. And up until then, it was really quite challenging, I think.
Yes. Yeah, it's quite interesting. And I think that's something that we've seen elsewhere, that, of course, there was the initial worry, concern, lots of what we're going to do, how do we do it? But then, as you say, perhaps staff, colleagues finding their feet, finding the answers to questions, finding ways to do things meant that, yeah, we plateaued. But on that point, can you say something about what sorts of tools and approaches that you're using this year in your teaching and maybe in your role there, if you've got any oversight on what other colleagues are doing?
So I think the main challenge really for most of us is just to get over yourself, because sitting in front of your computer and recording a lecture is just something that I don't think comes naturally to anybody, and you just have to get used to that as one aspect of what you're doing at the moment. But I think there's also other aspects in a similar sort of thing. So for instance, one thing that I use, I think that students respond to quite well, is I get in touch with other academics whose work we're reading for the module, and I record a short 20-minute conversation with them about the particular text that the students read for the module. I find that actually a much easier way of generating content than me just talking into my computer on my own. But I think it's also important for the students, because it gives them a sense that the person who's teaching them is part of a wider academic community, and that there's a dialogue between different researchers at different universities, and their teaching is part of that dialogue as well. And I think a final aspect, you also have to get used to doing things a little bit differently to liven things up for the students. So I've started using my children's guinea pigs in examples for the module, and the students see them every now and then in my videos, and that's been quite popular. And it's even, my wife has suggested to me to open up a Twitter account run by the guinea pigs, and that's now the module Twitter, as it were. And I use it in a kind of joking way, but also in a serious way, because there is some material that's relevant to the module that you wouldn't necessarily put on the Moodle page for the module, because it's not academic material, but it's something out there in the media or so. But it relates to what the student's doing in the module. So it's a good way of highlighting to students that there's stuff out there that they might also want to look at, that they might want to read or so, that bears on what we're doing in the module.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear, actually. And if anybody listening wants to find out about how those guinea pigs are getting on, I found them at Philosophy Pigs. They're the ones, I guess.
Yes, that's the one.
Brilliant. And interesting, you mentioned a couple of things there. One is about the sort of getting over yourself, but there is something about identity and the change between the physical location and being in front of an audience versus the loneliness of the long distance Zoom caller. And then also interesting, you mentioned, and I've spoken to somebody else today about that idea of bringing in other voices, the wider academic community. But I think that whilst many of us would still think that getting together in a room with other human beings is often preferable, that this technology does mean that those sorts of things are fairly easy to do, aren't they? And they're low cost because your colleague doesn't have to turn up and be there.
Yes, yeah. And I've been quite astonished, actually, because many of the people that I've had conversations with are people that I didn't know before personally. And so far, nobody has said no to my invitation to talk to them briefly. So I think people are keen to hear that their papers are being used for teaching, and they're keen to share their views.
That's good. And another way of, as you say, bringing the subject and the content and the ideas to life and putting a face to a name, if nothing else. That's good. Could I ask, perhaps, can you say about the student experience? Say something about that.
Well, I think we're still really trying to figure out how to get tabs on exactly what the student experience is like. So obviously we have SSLC meetings and so on, and obviously we talk to our personal tutees about their experience. But I think one of the challenges of this situation is that you can't be sure that all the students engage with this in the same way or experience the situation in the same way. I think there is quite a big differential between different students. Now, certainly some students actually thrive in the climate because they have everything available to them at the click of a mouse, and they enjoy that. I fear that there might be other students who find it less easy to engage or are not motivated enough to engage properly. So, and we need to be very careful that we check on that, and that we find out about that as soon as possible, and then try to get those students to engage. One interesting thing I hear from a number of students is that they talk about the workload quite a lot. And I think that's partly to do with the fact that those are students who engage with the online material in a much more intensive way than they would just by going to a lecture. So for them, listening to watching a 20-minute video will take an hour or so, because they stop the video and write things down, and then they start again, or they listen to something again. And then they find, of course, that they've got quite a lot of work on their hands if they do that for every 20-minute video. Yeah. So we sometimes actually, I think, have to tell students it's okay just at the first pass, perhaps, just to listen to the 20 minutes as though you were sitting in the lecture hall, and then think about it and think about what. So with some of my videos, I say to students, specific point of this video is not that you have to take everything down that I'm saying, but rather in this video I'm talking about one particular text that I think is relevant to this module, and I want you to watch the video in order to decide whether this is a text that I should read in addition to all, to the other module material, or whether maybe this is not something that is going to be relevant to my essay, so I can just watch the video and then move on to something else.
Yes, and that's interesting, actually. And that's something I have heard from elsewhere, that concern about students who are perhaps being diligent. They see everything in front of them and think that they have to do everything, and things will take longer for them. As it does for us, in fact, and I know as well as you will that preparing a 1 hour lecture or session will take a lot longer than that. On that note, Christoph, how have you personally been getting on with that side of things? Has the technology been behaving? Have you got favoured processes and ways of working for recording your content?
I'm trying to vary things a little bit, because again, that's, I think, something that students respond to if you don't always have the recorded PowerPoint, for instance. So I use the recorded PowerPoints, but sometimes I also use software that allows me to be on the screen as well, in a little window. And I've also had a couple of videos where where it's just me talking, basically, where there isn't a presentation as such. What I like to do with those is, in each case, is not just the video that the students get. The students also get a handout, and it causes quite a lot of work, because getting material from PowerPoint onto a Word document is not straightforward, and also not in the other direction. But I think it's important that they have a Word document which they can then use and annotate and so on, to look at as a handout while they're watching the video.
Yes. I understand that the philosophy department has been running a teaching exchange so that colleagues can see what each other has been doing.
I think this is a very good initiative by my colleague David Baylor Woods. So he basically just put together on Microsoft Teams a team which he called Philosophy Teaching Exchange. And what we do is just not on a regular basis, but every now and then, we meet up on that space and just exchange our views on how things are going, what the particular challenges is, what we find particularly difficult to cope with, exchanging ideas. And I think this is another example of just having to get over yourself, people get invited to talk about what they're doing for their module, and it can be difficult to bang your own drum for some people, but I think if it's done in the spirit of sharing ideas with other people, I think it works really well. It's also something, kind of, to be honest, is also partly for an opportunity for people to let off steam. I think we all need that at the moment as well, to be able to meet up and say, this isn't really working for me, this particular thing. It's things like students not switching on their cameras, and then you sit there and you don't know what they're doing. And I think that's making it very, very difficult for staff.
Yeah, I think those peer sharing forums can be very powerful. Yeah, good. Would you have any technology tips or advice, or is there anything you've learned from the way you've been doing things that you might want to share?
I mean, actually, on the technology side, I have to say that I'm very old fashioned, and I'm not I don't use any sophisticated software. Some of my colleagues do. Some of them use green screen and everything. I don't do that. I think the important thing is to figure out for oneself that usually there is some technology that you can use for your purposes. But I think the main challenges are to do with the people rather than with the technology. We just have to think about how to do things differently, and how to how to do teaching within this new context.
Yeah, well, I think not overcomplicating things, and certainly focusing on the content, thinking about the student experience, all of those are clearly important, aren't they? Yeah, thank you for that. Did you have any other, before we finish, was there anything else that perhaps you wanted to mention, or any other comments or ideas that we haven't discussed?
I think what will be really interesting to see is where things go from now, even once the pandemic is over. Are we just, I mean, clearly we want to go back to in-class teaching, but I'm not sure whether it'll just be going back to how things were before. And there might still be some things that have changed for good through this process. And we'll just have to wait and see what they're going to be.
Exactly. And that's one thing we'll all do. But it does feel like things can't and won't go back to exactly how they are. But hopefully getting back into a room together and meeting one another face to face will be easier. Thanks ever so much for your time today, Christoph. It's been really interesting to hear from you and have a chat. Thanks again.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
So I'm here today with Lida Merbaha from the Warwick Medical School. But perhaps you could introduce yourself, Lida, and say a little bit about your role and work at Warwick.
Yes, absolutely. So as you mentioned, my name is Lida Merbaha and I am based at Warwick Medical School in the Division of Biomedical Sciences. So I'm a senior teaching fellow and I work on a course called BSc Health and Medical Sciences, and I act as the medical science theme lead for that course. So the course is newly launched. So it was launched in 2020, which is one of the probably most challenging years that you could decide to launch an undergraduate course. And obviously we have successfully now launched the course. I also act as the education lead for the biomedical sciences division as well for Warwick Medical School.
Thank you. And actually, before I ask more about the course and your move to online, are you also involved in some research, or you have a particular interest in epigenetics I saw on your account?
I do. So before joining Warwick Medical School in 2018, I was based at University of Birmingham, and I used to work as one of the Birmingham Fellows, which was a 100% research-based position. So for that, my interest was epigenetics and aging. And before that, my PhD was focused on epigenetics of cancer. I still do a little bit of research in the area of epigenetics, but I also am trying to gradually move towards more educational research projects as well.
Okay. Well, if you manage to find out anything about reversing the aging process, let me know. That's good.
I will definitely let you know.
Thank you. So could you say how the BSE is structured, organised, and how it's delivered?
Yes, definitely. So just to give you a little bit of a background about the course and what is all about and how it's organised. So BSE Health and Medical Sciences is a new course, obviously launched in 2020, and it's a three-year course. And the idea behind the course is that it's basically integrating two disciplines. One discipline is health sciences and the other discipline is medical sciences. So everything that we do in the course is being taught in an interdisciplinary manner. So in a way, you can't separate the health sciences discipline from medical sciences discipline. So what we're trying to do is to actually end up with a graduate that can easily work across the boundaries of health science and medical sciences, which is actually quite a new approach. And in terms of the delivery of the course, basically the plan for the course has always been that 25% to 30% of the course is delivered online, and then about 70% of the course, 75% of the course is delivered face to face. So we also didn't want to use the online percentage of the course. We didn't want to use just basically recording lectures and then putting them online. We actually were looking at interactive online resources, but I'll come back to that in a minute. So the other important aspects of the course that I should highlight is that the course is basically looking at managing and resolving global and local problems in health from the integrated perspective of health science and medical science, which is actually quite current and timely because of the current pandemic that we're in. So it actually addresses issues such as coronavirus and other topical issues and important health issues as well. In terms of the actual structure of the course, an important aspect of the course is that we are actually interested in our students being able to apply their knowledge. So what we do is that we use various approaches for teaching. So we have interactive lectures. So we're actually are encouraging our staff to use, for example, technologies that they can ask a question from students and then see the response. So pulling approaches in a way. And then we're also using approaches such as case-based learning, which is a signature teaching approach for Warwick Medical School, where you actually give them a realistic case scenario and you actually ask them to try to investigate that case by applying their knowledge and what we've been teaching them to that case scenario. So in a way, it's a very holistic and realistic way of teaching and learning as well. Then we're coupling the interactive lectures and case-based learning with something that we're calling technology-enhanced learning. So that technology-enhanced learning is that 25%, 30% of the course that's being delivered online. Then obviously everything else is being supported with personal tutorial support as well.
So I appreciate that, of course, this must be a team effort. Can you say a little bit about that and how the course is organised?
Yes, this is definitely a team effort, and there's a lot of individuals involved in trying to actually make this course run as smoothly as it has been. So, for example, Professor David Davis is the course director, and I act as the medical sciences theme lead, and we have a theme lead, Farhan Nurdali, which act as the health science theme lead. And then we have all the module leads, all the session contributors, all the admin individuals that help out, the technology support team. So Richard Clay has been quite essential actually for delivering this course. So it has been a collaborative effort, and we couldn't have done it with all the help of the individuals that have been involved.
It's always interesting to hear about the specifics. So what sorts of tools are you using for that interactivity in the lecture? What do you use for that?
So to give you an example, like a couple of weeks ago, we used Kahoot as a tool as well. So we actually prepared some questions and quizzes, and we got the whole cohort to log in with their mobile phone and answer the questions. And I think that's a really nice way, because one, it gives the lecturer a way of assessing their learning level. So we actually did this towards the end of a 4-week long module. So it actually enabled us to figure out how much of our teaching has been effective during these 4 weeks. But also the student felt very comfortable, because we actually told them, don't use your own real names. So it was anonymous. So they felt really comfortable in terms of responding to the questions as well. And they really enjoyed it and liked it as well. We use ResponseFair as well. So these are other tools that we use. So that what we're trying to encourage is that basically each lecture should have a interactive part. So that could be it could be through Kahoot, or it could be ResponseFair, so anything. And obviously if you have a class of, let's say, 27-30, it's much more harder to ask them a question and then ask them to raise their hand and answer the question, because they may feel that you're putting them on the spot. But if you use a software such as this, it actually will help them to answer the question without feeling on the spot or pressured to answer it as well. I have to say that there has been some challenges because of the current situation. So because obviously now our lectures are not being hosted face to face, so we have had to make some adjustments as well. But as soon as we go face to face, we bring everything that we had planned back out, and we actually try to run with our original plan as well.
I think you mentioned that 25% of the course was planned to be delivered online, but that's changed because of the current situation.
So originally 25% was supposed to be delivered online. And the key technology that we're using to deliver that 25% is something called LT, which is delivered by a company called ADI Instrument, which is really good for delivering interactive online lessons. At the moment, what has happened is that because of the current situation, we basically have divided all our teachings to, they either fall under case-based learning teaching method, or they fall under interactive lectures, group discussions or technology-enhanced learning. So technology-enhanced learning originally was planned to be delivered online. So that's the only component that hasn't been affected by the current situation. The group discussions are still being delivered face-to-face because it's good to have that face-to-face contact point. And also the case-based learning is still being planned to deliver and is delivered face-to-face. The part that we had to move online is basically the interactive lectures. So interactive lectures are now being delivered as pre-recorded lectures. But what we're trying to do is that we're actually coupling them with support sessions where lecturers can actually arrange Teams meetings where they are present and the whole cohort can join us on Teams and they can address any questions that students may have. So in a way, that provides additional support for the pre-recorded material as well.
Thank you for that. So can I just clarify then? So when you talked about Kahoot earlier, is that in a face-to-face setting or is it in a Teams meeting or is it both? What is that?
The Kahoot is mainly in the group discussions, so the face-to-face sessions. Although I know that for some of the synchronous online teaching that we've been doing, some of the lectures that have been delivering the synchronous online teaching via Teams, they also have been using tools as well. So they, for example, they use breakout rooms. So divide the group into smaller groups and they give them something to discuss. They also use responseware and ask them a question and then collect the data as well on Teams as well. So we haven't just used it on the face-to-face sessions. We also have used it with synchronous online teaching as well.
I'm not so familiar with this thing that you mentioned, LT. What is that then? Because in my mind, the language I use is it's all Moodle or Teams or Tabula perhaps. So what is LT? Can you say something about that?
Yes. So LT, which is provided by ADI Instrument, basically when we were deciding what methods we should use for our online teaching, there were several approaches that we considered. So we considered H5P, we considered Moodle and the interactions that are in Moodle, but then also we started experimenting with softwares that are provided by external companies. So, for example, one of the ones that we decided to investigate is the LT, which is provided by ADI Instrument. And the main reason is that previously it has been used within Warwick Medical School in one of the courses, MBCHB, and we know that it has been very well received. So we started experimenting with it as well, and we basically took it up as a method of teaching and learning as well.
Can I ask then, what is LT? Is it a package of resources? Is it a learning environment? What would I see if I saw it?
I would say it's really brilliant because it actually has got quite a lot of things embedded in it. So it comes with already prepared lessons. So you got packages that the lessons are already prepared and you can take those lessons and edit them as much as you want. So you basically don't start a lesson from scratch. But also you can do kind of dry lab experiments as well. So you can attach different equipments and bring different equipments and do the experiments, import your data into LT and do some kind of dry lab experiments. But also you can create your own lessons online as well from scratch. But the nice thing about LT is that probably it takes about 5 minutes to learn how to use it. And the quality of the lessons that you end up generating is very high standard. It ends up looking quite nice and smart, and it's very interactive because you can embed different types of questions, videos, everything. But what I notice is that I think it's difference of opinion and what you end up preferring to use. So for example, I have used H5P. I found it that it does take a lot of time to make the lesson look very nice and good looking. So the final product actually looking quite nice and smart.
Thank you for that. And I suppose any tool that speeds up the process of building and designing good looking learning content has to be good. So could I then ask you about the student experience? What did students do in terms of perhaps interactivity and what do you expect them to do online? And then connected to that, perhaps, how are they assessed? And do you have anything to say about that as far as the online learning experience is concerned?
So again, this relates to the online experience for this year because of the current situation. So for this year, students are expected to, we basically have given them a timetable. So although the lectures are pre-recorded, we kind of thought for students, especially first year students, having a timetable where it indicates when they should complete the pre-recorded lecture would actually give them a little bit of a structure and help. So we decided to actually include the times in the timetable for the pre-recorded lectures. So in a way, on a day-to-day basis, we expect students to follow the timetable where it's indicated when they actually have to engage with any of the pre-recorded material. And then in addition to that, they would have to attend face-to-face sessions for group discussions. And also they join Teams meeting for any synchronous online teaching that we do as well. And then for their technology enhanced learning, again, it's all timetable. So we indicate when they have to complete each of the 12 sessions that we have included for them, which about 90% of them are supported by LT. Although I have to say some of our lectures are still using Moodle to create their online material.
Yeah. And what about the assessment side of things then? So perhaps what you've described could be thought of as formative activities, maybe. But what about assessment? When do they happen and what will they do?
So for the assessments, the course was designed to use a range of assessment because obviously we are aware that not one method of assessment is suitable for the diversity of our students. So we have a range of assessments from essays to MCQs to posters and presentations and grant applications and pitching to a panel your idea. So we got a range of assessment throughout the 3 years of the course. And we actually have got a new assessment approach called synoptic assessment, where you basically sit one assessment at the end of the year where the information comes from all the modules that you have done throughout the year. So you actually have to integrate all the information to be able to answer that assessment. And it actually gets more interesting because in the end of the third year, they have an entire module that's assessment based. And in that module, what they would do is that we actually give them case studies. Because they've been doing CBL, so they should be very familiar with cases. So we actually give them two case studies, and they have to integrate all the information that they have learned in the 3 years of the course to then be able to answer that case and investigate that case. And we think that's a very holistic way of actually assessing them because it's as realistic as you can get. It's a case scenario, and you have to address that case scenario with all the information that you have learned. In terms of assessments for this year, so obviously we had to move all our assessments online. So what we have done is that all our assessments are coupled with a formative. So for example, for our MCQs, but in terms of the assessments approaches, so if it's a written assessment, we basically just ask them to submit it online. For the MCQs, they will sit an exam again online as well. So everything just been moved online.
Sorry to interrupt. I always get carried away and excited when I hear the mention of various technologies. So with the MCQ assessments, would you still use the LT platform, or would you use Moodle, or would you use QMP? What would you expect to use for that process?
So we actually are in discussion to using question mark perception for our MCQ exams. Our assessments are dotted around in the year, so they don't just sit an assessment at the end of the year. So for example, their first module was 4 weeks long, and their first assessment for that is due in January when they come back. So just to give you an indication, in January when the students have come back, they have to write a concept map and submit the concept map. They have to also write a case scenario description and interpretation, and they also sit a MCQ paper.
Okay, yeah, thank you. That's interesting to know. So can I ask then, it's a new course, certainly unusual conditions and been a difficult year for everyone, but how's it going so far? And can you say what have been the challenges and even perhaps any lessons that have been learned already?
It's been going very well, actually, surprisingly, because obviously under the current situation and being a new course, you expect quite a lot of things that would go wrong, but it's going well. I think one of the challenges that probably most courses have hit so far in the year has been that in the first module, half of our cohort were self-isolating. So that required immediately changing some of the lessons that were planned to be delivered face-to-face and deliver them synchronous online, so through Teams. So I think one of the key, maybe that would just relate to this year, key lessons that we learned was that try not to put any teaching on Monday morning, because if then you have to suddenly put it online under the current situation, you would be trying to contact staff on Sunday evening, which is not the best of things to do. In terms of the surprises, to be honest, a couple of things that really I found interesting, and because we obviously finished our first module, so we have feedback from students. One of the things that they mentioned is that they actually liked the idea of pre-recorded lectures because they can stop the lecture and take notes and they can complete the lecture in their own time. But one of the points that they raised is that they are now worried about when this year finishes and then they have to come in the class and you can't pause a lecture at that point. So that's really been interesting because I never thought about that. I thought they wouldn't worry about that aspect, but that's one of the things that they raised, which actually obviously we have said to them that don't worry, because obviously there is Echo 360, all the lectures will be recorded. You can do that at home as well and just look at the slides that you missed. Another thing that they mentioned is that the TEL session, the Technology Enhanced Learning, has actually been really positively received. So they really like the interactive online resources because there's a lot of questions embedded there. So they can actually test their own learning and they like learning in their own speed as well. The only thing that I took away as a learning thing is that sometimes as a member of staff, you forget that you're familiar with some of the technologies because obviously you've been working with them. And sometimes you don't see it from the perspective of the students that's seen them for the first time. So within the module being launched, one of the comments that we get was, how do I interact with these TEL sessions? So for us, it was easy because we thought, well, you just log in, you do this and this. But we forget that we've basically been doing this and using them. So we then prepared a video of us using the TEL sessions and guided them to how to use it and then uploaded that onto Moodle. And then that resolved the issue. So I think the main thing is that sometimes you just have to put yourself, well, you have to do that quite often, but you have to keep on reminding yourself that you have to view things from students' perspective, because sometimes you do it so often that you forget to them some of the things may be new.
Yeah, thank you for that and some good feedback, but also important points. Thinking about the student perspective and not taking anything for granted, which, as you say, we can do when we're using technology on a daily basis. Do you have any other technology tips or advice or something you might have learned that you wish you'd known earlier?
I think just experimenting with different technologies, because sometimes I think this course gave us the opportunity to actually say what's out there and try different approaches and then select the one that was most appropriate for us, rather than looking at existing technologies that we are using day to day and just trying to make one of those work for us. So in a way, it's just looking out there, thinking, what is your need? Is there another technology that does the job better that you should be looking towards that? That would be my advice.
The one thing I was going to ask was, you mentioned about that thing about the tutor, us making sure we don't make assumptions. But, oh yeah, one thing that's cropped up elsewhere, I don't know if you have a view on this, is that sometimes diligent students, keen students, end up spending more time studying as a result of this stopping and checking and rewinding, and because they've got an access to so much stuff, sometimes they need help managing that and not feeling guilty about perhaps finishing everything. Have you had any experience around that?
Yes, so because obviously, especially with first year students, so they're new to university, and with this year and the gap that they had, I think that it was a bigger issue for us and for any other course in the same situation. So we used to get the comment about, for example, how do I engage with the reading list? How much of it do I need to read? Or do I need to complete all the technology enhanced learning, and how many notes do I have to make and things like that. So we actually, in our first module, we had sessions about study skills. So we were actually teaching them different methods of note taking, what you should focus, and those areas of that we covered those areas. So we did have to have some discussion about how do you use the resources, which ones you should pay more attention to, and how do you prioritize as well. One of the most challenging things has been that when you got both groups together, so you got you're actually teaching face to face, but obviously some students are online because, for example, they might be international students that couldn't join at the same time. So you're trying to merge the two at the same time together. It has taken me probably two or three sessions to get this set up right. a simple thing of trying to get the speaker and the microphone sorted. So when you go into a lecture theatre, you think, well, it would be okay if it's a discussion because of the current setting. You don't think that those students have to sit much more separated from each other. So it won't pick everything that everyone is saying. So we then had to get conference speakers with longer leads. So the first time we went in, I had a short lead and it wouldn't actually reach far. So it's kind of these things that does take time to learn. And you only, to be honest, you only learn them by practicing them and putting them into practice. So I wish I knew it, but the only way to find out really what works for a dual setup is to actually try different things and figure out what actually does work.
Oh, thanks ever so much for your time this afternoon, Lida. I've enjoyed talking to you and finding out about your work and the new BSc programme.
Thank you. I really enjoyed chatting with you too, Jim.
Thank you. So that's it for this fifth edition of the LDCU Talking Online Learning Podcast. Thanks again to contributors Christoph Hurl and Lida Merbaha. If you or your team or someone you know has something to share related to the world of online learning at Warwick, then please do get in touch. It would be great to talk. I should reward you for making it this far with a technology trivia fact. But I've had an email from Toby in WBS. He says, "Dear Jim, thanks for the podcast so far. I've enjoyed them all, but I have a question. Will my portable device, such as an MP3 player or smartphone, weigh more if it is full of podcasts or music?" Great question, Toby. So I've been in touch with the physics department and I'm reliably told the answer is no, not even if you listen to heavy metal. But apparently your device will weigh slightly, fractionally, a little bit more when fully charged. And that's due to the energy-mass relationship. But any increase is very tiny, and it would be similar in effect to the change in mass if you added a sugar cube to the Empire State Building. So what about that? Now you know. That's it. Thanks for listening.